any of this. There we go. Hey, we are almost done with the Esports Business Summit. So thank you for not getting an early flight and coming by and spending some time with us. So I'm going to just really quick kind of outline what we're going to do. I will obviously introduce myself. I'll introduce our panel members, and then we are going to jump into picking their brain as to how to be as successful as possible in the experiential side of things. So I'm going to start with Tatiana Taka, the director of esports for Momentum Worldwide. So come on up, yeah. And we are also joined by Joe Barnes, the director of experiential marketing at Anheuser-Busch. And Stuart Lipson, the executive director from the Esports Ad Bureau. And Tatiana, if you want to start really fast, and we'll just work our way down.
Sounds good.
Talking about who you are, and then we'll just kind of get in some questions. Just have you go down one, because I'm going to sit right here for you. Yeah.
Sounds great. So I lead esports and gaming for Momentum. We're a sponsorship and experiential agency. So essentially our role is to help brands learn more about esports and the opportunity, really help kind of break down the overall scene and its fragmentation, identify how to get into the space, what are the ideal opportunities, and you know, ultimately build out that strategy and activation.
And Stuart?
We started the Esports Ad Bureau in July of 16 with a very simple mission, which is to make sure that what happened in digital media didn't happen in esports, in essence, tripping over dollars, chasing nickels. And we're really thrilled with the progress we've made. We support companies like ESL, EA, Twitch, Activision Blizzard, and Turner.
Joe Barnes, Anheuser-Busch. I do sports marketing for Bud Light, so NFL, NHL, NCAA, esports, soccer.
And now even more, right? Nothing gets left off your plate, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And my name is Rob Gonzalez. What I do is I work as an esports host, and when we talk about experiential experiences, I host the HyperX esports truck. So I go around creating these experiences for players, for their families, for their friends, and so it's nice to be able to talk to some experts in the field. And so, Tatiana, I want to start with you.
Sure.
We talk about opportunities in esports. We hear it all the time that there's so much money, there's so many rabid fans, there's this base that we want to tap into. And in your opinion, what do you believe is the biggest opportunity in this space for brands?
I mean, that's kind of a big question, and what I always do is really dive into what a brand is looking for, you know, specifically with their KPIs, because there's so many different things with the fragmentation of the space. There's so many different types of assets and partners, and you know, whether it's teams or leagues or influencers or live events. There's so many different types of assets, and those nuances as you go down to what each individual offering, you know, is very unique. But you know, in the subject of experiential, what we're seeing a lot of is brands are interested in, you know, getting into the space, you know, trying out things, and ultimately building out that strategy. A lot of that focus can be on media, makes sense. You know, there's a lot of scale that you can find in broadcast and Twitch and influencers and things like that. But ultimately, what we're seeing is 70% of esports fans are asking, are actively demanding and think that brand sponsorship is good for the industry. Yet that same percentage is unsatisfied with the brand activation at live events.
So why do you believe that there's that, I mean, that's a huge gap of going from 70% believe that they should be here, but 70% believe that what they're seeing isn't up to snuff. What's the missing denominator there for them?
Well, a lot of the focus in esports has been around more digital and social experiences. You know, you see that kind of in many cases across the board. Esports experiences, in my opinion, is a story of quality over quantity. Whereas you know, your live events are always going to be tentpole moments, your finals, your conventions, these big traveling experiences where a bunch of fans come from, you know, internationally or, you know, from out of state to these events. And ultimately that results in these insane rapt fans. And so a lot of value can be found that way. However, there's not as many of them compared to traditional sports and music, and therefore a lot of the focus can be more around the digital side. So that's where I would say is just it showcases an overall significant white space and opportunity for brands.
Stuart, I want to come to you. When we talk about these really big events, and everyone's talking about the Fortnite World Cup, okay? Huge carnival-type atmosphere. I was a host there, got to see it up close and personal, and the kind of passion that was brought there. In your experience, is that what that kind of event, is that what it's going to take to bring some of these non-endemic partners to the table, or can it be smaller events? Everyone here wants to know how to bring some of these non-endemic sponsors to the table.
Well, I think, as Tatiana said, it's one component of a bigger strategy, and it's all got to fit together. Buzzwords, in my opinion, are only buzzwords if they aren't effective. Test and learn matters. The first deal should be the hardest, because you should then be able to secure longer-term commitments, which allows you to develop a portfolio of opportunities. I think the most important thing is no matter what you do, whether it's in front of 6 people or 600 million people, online or in person, is over-deliver on the promise. Because this audience has so many platforms and so many ways to reach them. And to your point a moment ago, we have that opportunity, but if we don't deliver it in a quality way, they also have the ability to shut us out.
And do you believe that with some of these sponsors that want to come to the table, that some of them do have a bad taste in their mouth when it comes to some of the things that have been delivered or not delivered to them?
No, I don't think we've been around long enough in a commercial capacity for that to happen. I think a lot of people are still figuring out the metrics and the measurements, and how does it fit compared to what we've been speaking to is premium revenue and esports is sports and sports marketing. So in order to be able to garner those budgets and garner those opportunities, we've got to be able to also have metrics and data that allow people to measure against that. And that's what we're in the midst of developing.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because we talk about KPIs, we talk about ROI, all those are very important things when you're making sure that you can get that second opportunity to work, right? You want to be able to, like you said, over-deliver on what your promise was. But when you talk about measuring, what are the kind of things that the brands are looking for when you're talking about these measurements? What do they want to see from you if you're going to make a presentation?
Well, so you've got multiple budgets. You've got sponsorship budgets. You've got media budgets. You've got different groups selling in. You've got leagues. You've got broadcast properties. And essentially, you need to go in with a cohesive pitch and a cohesive organization to help the client be able to take it back to the finance people. So as it was said in another session, it fits within their spreadsheets.
Right. And Joe, you said that you are working with a lot of different organizations, big, small, all over the place. For Anheuser-Busch, what is the first thing that you're looking at when you're wanting to be involved with something?
So that's a bit of a loaded question, so let me unpack a little bit. So I think with esports for us, and Bud Light is the brand that we've used as our anchor within the space, at least in the U.S., for us, it's the demographics, right? For us, we're trying to recruit 21 to 27-year-old consumers. For us, there's no other league, team, anything that can offer us the age that esports offers. So for us, we want to get in, we want to recruit that new consumer. The big challenge that we have is up until this point, beer occasions haven't been established in the space. So when we look at the NFL, right, 21 to 27-year-olds, they go to the bar, they order pitchers of Bud Light, buckets, they just hang out all day, they drink. That isn't established in esports. So for us, how do we create those occasions, create Bud Light as a part of esports? Because we are non-endemic. But if you look at the NFL, maybe we're a little more endemic to that because it's all about the fans and their viewing experience.
And I guess going into that a little bit deeper is when you're trying to create this fan experience that will lead them to using your brand, how do you see esports fitting into that? I mean, we talk about that really essential demo, right? That is a demo that spends money. That is a demo that you can really influence. Now, in esports, somebody who participates in esports, I don't always associate a beer brand, you know, to esports. I don't associate that to video games. How do you guys get over that hump when you're brainstorming, like, okay, here's how we're going to make this connection and people are going to buy into it?
Yeah, totally. And we haven't solved it yet.
I was going to say, can I have the secret real fast? I'm going to sell it.
But I think what we're looking at right now is that there's different levers that we have to look at. So it's not just experiential activations. It's not just digital. It's not just content. But for us, if we can do a mix, what Bud Light can do is we can offer value back to the fans. So Overwatch League is the big announcement that we made this year and big flagship partnership. But so what we do there is we have weekly content series. So fans are associating us. It's at the happy hour, right? So it comes on every week. It's a bar setting. They're drinking beers, talking about esports. Then we have the homestand weekends, which is the first time Overwatch was ever played in real life, right, for fans outside of Blizzard Arena. So what we did there is we created the most premium VIP experience. So when people associate Bud Light with esports, they're like, dang, these guys are going to offer me the coolest thing that I could possibly do. I'll go be able to watch from the watchtower, so play on the Overwatch IP, right? I'll be able to watch from the watchtower, and I'm going to sit up there with former players, influencers, do meet and greets, have free beer, of course, and really just enjoy the game. So what Bud Light offers, it's for the fans. We're not going to make your internet faster, your chair more comfortable, but we can offer something for the fans to really engage with and have a good time.
And I wouldn't necessarily agree with the idea that esports doesn't overlap with beer, alcoholic beverages in general. People go to esports events not just to engage in their, you know, most hardcore passion points, but a large portion of it is around the socialization. Many people have stated that they've made really close friends through these events, and that a reason to go to these events, there's a really strong interest around that socialization, meeting more people who, you know, share the same passion points. Even Twitch itself and that viewing experience, even at home, can very much be a social place. And we've seen overall there's a general white space around local engagement, especially thinking about the finals and conventions really being in these one locations, which is, you know, great to see. It's great to see more like of those local initiatives, like the homestands for next year, and you know, and those pop-ups and things like that. I'd say there's a very, very natural story, just like with sports, for a brand like Bud Light to play.
Yeah, what I was going to also ask is, we talk about localization. We have a lot of these esports leagues where going to these home market events, where it's going to be more like basketball, where you have your hometown. You get to come be around all of your fans, boo the guys that are coming in. And when we talk about those kind of activations there's also this worry that if you're new to this game, you're new to this community, that you won't be accepted, that the brand might be looked at as like a fraud, just kind of trying to buy their way in. What kind of initiatives do you guys take to try to make sure that you can tap into the community, get their buy-in, and make sure that it's, I won't say welcoming arms, because sometimes it's not always in the very beginning, but how do you do your best to make sure that you get those welcoming arms when you come in?
It's definitely always about adding value. That's first and foremost, and a brand should not be getting into this space without at least thinking about what the fans are looking for and what they can offer to that audience. I wouldn't necessarily agree either that, you know, people are looking at brands with an eye of skepticism. As I mentioned, 75% of esports fans think that bigger brands should be entering the space. It's something that, you know, for them, it's a legitimization of the passion. So the question is, how are you doing it, and are you doing it right, and really understanding what that audience is looking for? In many cases, you know, and we did a bespoke survey research specifically on this subject of what fans are looking for in the experiential space, and a lot of it is more opportunities to meet talent, whether it's pros or influencers or behind-the-scenes folks. It's the VIP experiences. It's merchandise, actually, is a significant one. You know, people, you know, you get a lot of swag, but is it quality? Is it what people actually are looking for? They're very open to, you know, co-branded merchandise and stuff like that. So it's really about understanding where things are, you know, areas are kind of falling and where publishers where you can fill in for what the publishers aren't necessarily doing right now.
I also think, and I want to, we occupy a support role, that I want to support what Tatiana and Joe are doing, because by and large, no one wants to get fired for doing the wrong thing. And everybody wants to be first to be second. And these guys are out there being first. And they're raising, they're setting the bar and continually raising the bar. So I think every time we do this, every time we see this, we're going to learn. So if you're playing buzzword bingo, test and learn, you know, that's how we're going to get more clients, more categories, bigger, better experiences. I spent a good amount of time with NASCAR. And when I first saw that, I was just blown away by accessibility and merchandising and just how refined a machine it had become. So we've got the models to draft behind.
And you mentioned test and learn, and I do agree that that's a really, it's an important element to hit, because many brands do want to do more of a crawl, walk, run type approach. And a lot of brands look at the space and they're like, okay, what do we do as our test and learn? And experiential is more often than not considered, you know, in comparison. And many of that is due to the cost of experiential and activating, and also due to, you know, when are these moments occurring and does it fit with our marketing calendar and stuff like that, which is why I'm kind of particularly excited by things like more adjacent pop-ups around live events. You're starting to see a bigger usage of that, as well as just pop-ups that aren't even around live events. And I'll give you an example of two. I was really impressed with what NYXL did for their own pop-up in New York. That's one that lasted 3 weeks long in Brooklyn, and they partnered with Nike and Champion and a bunch of exclusive merchandise collaborations. And then there was FaZe Clan that did their they did their New York pop-up, and that was just 2 days or 1 day. It was 1 day, and it was around the Fortnite World Cup. So that was like, you know, 7,000 people coming to that, and just an insane level of.
They got shut down by the police.
There was just such an overwhelming interest. And then when you look at stuff like the Overwatch home stands next year, that's a great opportunity for smaller weekends and activation that are, you know, more like, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 rather than 20,000+, but, you know, offers those opportunities to try out things and engage with the audience in a way that can be, you know, really memorable. TwitchCon's another really great example of brands that have been able to, you know, try out things for the first time in an experiential capacity, and then they have the broadcast and social and live streams that help drive additional scale beyond that.
Joe, we talk about these activations, and sometimes they're very small, sometimes they're very big. And when we talk about these customers really feeling like they're dissatisfied with the implementation, because just like she was saying, everybody wants the sponsors there, but they also are feeling like they're not really getting enough value out of it. What do you see as additional points where extra value can be added when we talk about the homestand? Obviously, being a sponsor of the homestand is great, but when you're sitting down and talking about what are the things that we're going to add to the fans to make sure that they get their buy-in, we talked about some of the things of content-wise, but what were the pieces that you really said, okay, we have to have these things to add to the consumer base?
Yeah, so, I mean, I can give you a good example with the Dallas homestand. So for that event, we did a lot of surveying because that was our first big foray into the homestands. And we saw that when we looked at the brand awareness and the affinity, it was through the roof. So we were at like 98% awareness amongst fans, which for us, if we're at 40, we're happy usually. And the next person behind us was about 20, and Coke was at 2, right? So everyone's a partner. You see where we are. And so for us, it's like, how can we become more impactful at the events? For us, what we say at Anheuser-Busch all the time is beer is the original social network. People go, like for centuries, have gone to get a pint at the bar, talk, be communal. So for us, with our first foray into it this year, we're like, how can we bring these virtual communities, these virtual friends who watch on Twitch or something every week together physically to enjoy beer, to talk, to have fun, to root on their team? And so for that, we created bars within the arena. We had our VIP experience. We had the Bud Knight doing t-shirt cannons. I mean, we were all over the place. And for us, it was just that we needed to reach these fans by doing something that is is bigger than just a sign in the arena for us. It's so much more important to have all these extra activation elements so that fans see us as adding value back to them.
Stuart, I was going to just kind of leading on to what he's saying is when you're trying to go big, okay, and you have a client come to you and they say, hey, this is what we want. How do you temper the expectations with their budget? Because sometimes someone will say, you know, we want the world, and you're just trying to, like, explain to them, like what you're asking for is not possible in this budget, okay? Like, how do we temper expectations with reality?
Well, I think the beauty of what Joe just walked us through sort of lays that out, because you do it, you see what works, and you figure out a way that you can make it scalable and replicate it based on size of market, size of event, locations, and then you can put together a portfolio of opportunities. And that's how you balance it out between on-site and broadcast as well, extending the audience.
So for the people in the audience who are looking to secure a sponsor, being able to give them very detailed options, and that can be in that budget, is that what you're talking about?
Well, easy. Not detailed.
Okay, easy, yeah. Easy, okay.
Just add water and stir. Even having to pull on the tap is too hard. You got to use a hand in the beer.
Okay.
So you have to make it so simple that why wouldn't they do it? All right, and what's also nice is when you see things like what Joe's doing, it makes it easier to have that conversation with another potential sponsor outside of the category because they have something that they can reference against. And that's really important. Is that they're not reinventing the wheel.
Right, we don't want to reinvent the wheel, right? We want to learn from our mistakes, like you said, test and learn. One of the other things is that the collegiate space is getting larger and larger every single year. I see tons of different conferences popping up, trying to dip their toe in. Tatiana, when we talk about white space, I personally think that the collegiate space is so huge, and there's a lot of opportunity there. Can you talk about, have you heard anything on that side in the collegiate space? I know you said that you had some new numbers that just like recently come in, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the numbers weren't really focused too much on collegiate. They were more focused around the kind of tentpole finals and conferences and things like that. I would definitely agree that collegiate is a white space. Overall, it's kind of funny. You know, some people will still say esports is the Wild West. I would completely disagree with that. I don't think that's a fair statement at all. In a way, collegiate though still is. It's very grassroots in nature. It's very kind of wide, and you do have these tentpole organizations coming together to help really organize that and. And that's been really great. I'd say it's especially an interesting opportunity for brands that are really looking to hit on the highly STEM students in particular. I think the stat from ULOL was that it was 66% of ULOL competitors are STEM majors. And that's really, really valuable for brands compared to, I think, 30% or less than that. So, yeah, I would definitely agree that's a white space. As it relates to live events, that's something I'd love to see. I'd love to see collegiate get more escalated in kind of creating these larger moments in the scene and bringing more and more people together. But it's definitely an exciting space. It's growing consistently, and it's perfect. And there's more and more, collegiate students getting involved in it.
I would like to just take a step back and just make sure that what people understand when we say white space, we're talking about freedom and flexibility.
Yes.
That in essence, we don't have in a lot of traditional sports, and we won't always have it. So the beauty of right now is we can do these things. And to some extent, it's under the radar. And to some extent, it's a matter of, all right, how do we get in now so that 1, 3, 5 years from now, we've been able to craft what that environment is so that it works across these multiple platforms.
Yeah, and that's why I was kind of touching on that collegiate space, because I've been talking to a lot of clients who want to be brand partners, and they want to know, hey, what are we bringing to these events? Because we have things, companies like TESPA, like CSL, that are out there doing these events. But then I'm also seeing other larger organizations trying to get in, and with the NCAA saying that they're going to step out, that they're not going to, thank God, that they're not going to, because that would have just been a nightmare. But with them stepping out, we do have brands feeling a little bit better about getting in on it. And when we talk for Joe, is that something that you see as well in that collegiate space, an opportunity for you, or is that just a little still skew a little bit too young for you?
Yeah, the college space is tough for us. So I oversee our NCAA partnerships with college football and college basketball and all that. And, you know, if we look at college football, they're just now starting to realize that, you know, beer can be a part of it. But from our legal standpoint and the amount of consumers that are under 21, it's tough, especially with esports. So for us, pro teams, and even within the pros, a lot of those players aren't even 21 yet, but more professional leagues, more developed, the higher the age, usually the better for us.
Yeah, I figured as much, but I just wanted to ask just in case there's been some like long-term plan on that side. But
I'd also like to tackle the NCAA piece in that I don't know that they've said we're not going to. I think they say we're not going to now. So there's a window, which I think helps with urgency, that if you want to take advantage of the freedom and the flexibility, now is a really good time to do it, because it may not be here in a year. Because at any given moment, someone can raise their hand and say, okay, now we figured it out, now we're in, here's the rules and regs, and at that point, it's really hard to retrofit what you want to do.
Yeah, if we're Doritos, we're all in on that, but right. Bud Light, it's a little bit different.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're also talking about, we're here in Vegas, and we know that we've got places like the HyperX Esports Arena. Atlantic City is also trying to become like another hub for esports. When it comes to these activations, how do you see these like gambling, you know, centers playing a part in that?
It's a really interesting one for sure. There's when you're talking about like the bigger conventions, you know, that's something that you know people are traveling to. You know, you have your 40. I think it's definitely more than 50% of people for like an average like gaming convention or esports final are for sure going to those things. I'd say with something like the Vegas initiatives, those are more kind of in a way like local engagements and really attracting folks who are in from out of town on vacation or want to combine a Vegas trip with it. I think what particularly interests me and where I think there's a lot of opportunity is to be hitting upon the former of those areas where you are seeing people with just insane levels of passion flying out to these experiences. In that research we did, we found that 50% are willing to fly to an esports event, and 47% had already traveled for esports events. So there's an obvious interest level, and there's a significant amount of engagement in that. They want to, they're willing to spend like more than $125 on average, on merchandise and all of those elements. So I think that's particularly where some of the excitement is and where brands can kind of focus some of their efforts on. With the arenas, like the really exciting thing is to be able to try new things that, haven't been done before, pro-ams and engagements in that way as well.
Yeah, I think also it's about amplification of what's happening on site in a creative content storytelling way that translates to the fans who are not there, because there's really no reason why they couldn't also be enjoying Joe's products.
Absolutely. I mean, we want to make sure that we can have that replication, not only with just the event itself, but sometimes with the experience, right? We've seen companies like the WWE try to replicate those kind of, you're here in the stadium, but we're going to try to give you that same experience at home. But what I also want to talk about is esports is growing, like you said, just exponentially every single year. But I have a lot of brands, when I talk to them, they say, oh gosh, I don't know where I want to be in esports. I don't know that, this is something that's going to be around long term. For Joe, what do you think to that? Like, I mean, if I'm a salesman and I'm pitching to my brand and that's what they give me, what's got you to buy in?
I mean, there's various factors, but for us, I mean, when we're looking at this, like the engagement that we can get with young consumers is unparalleled. So we recently, I think we're in week three right now, of what we call the Bud Light Beer League, which is a partnership with Twitch where it's essentially amateurs can become pro. And that's really the angle. What is Bud Light adding value back to the fans? Is that, you know, you can win some money, you can become a pro esports athlete. And that was a partnership done through Twitch and with the great guys at Bandai Namco, and it's a Tekken league. And so for us, doing things like that, where we can expand next year, where we can have beer league running all year long, different titles, that's reaching a ton of different consumers. And for us, I mean, we're getting 20,000 plus views a week. And for when I talk to my digital team on Bud Light, they're like, the engagements that we're getting through this. I mean, we tweet something, right? And you get a few hundred likes and a couple comments. But this year, you're getting people commenting the whole time. And for us, like, how do we become smarter with that? Can Bud Light is supposed to be fun, funny. Can I now have a Bud Light dedicated resource who's going to be commenting and almost like emceeing the event the whole time, engaging with consumers? For us, that's the next step up of just getting even bigger within this space, because it's a very highly engaged fan base.
It's about the audience. I mean, I think Joe hit it right in the head. There's very few places, very few ways you can get to the audience. I don't think it's about, is it going to go away? Because I think we're long past that. It's really a matter of how easy can we get, how easy can we make it to get all those other brands in? Because the reality is everybody's got 10 things to do every day, and they only get down to number three. And if we don't make esports as easy as number three, having it be a nice to have number four that doesn't get done, that's the issue.
And that's 100% right. So when we're looking at things, I mean, for us, that was such an easy thing to say yes to, because there's so many different people that could be like, wow, I see a ton of value in this, right? It's like the G League and NBA, right? It's the Bud Light Beer League. It's so cool. And so you can, as long as it's easy to sell in to the stakeholders, I mean, this doesn't get priority. It's NFL, right, that people want to hear about. But with esports, it is the number three, four priority. And for us, if we can do things like this that are transformative, that gets senior management buy-in. That gets everyone excited.
And Stuart, let's go into that a little bit. When you talk about easy, okay, what does that actually mean? Because I try to make things easy all the time when I'm talking, doing a presentation, right? And then it always ends up, we go down a rabbit hole, and then now it's too complicated. How do we keep it easy for these presentations and to be able to get someone to buy in?
Well, it would be great if there was just one someone. The dilemma is there is, you know, five someones from different groups with different budgets, with different priorities. So I think the first part is really to make sure that from the sales side, you're aligned and you know how you're setting up the dominoes to knock them down in such a way that each successive yes makes the next yes easier, so that all of a sudden by the time you get to the last one, everybody's in. And by the way, you can't make it too easy.
Okay.
There's just no way. You've got, because otherwise Joe's going to pick up somebody else's phone call.
And Tatiana, you want to speak to that?
No, I think you guys hit it on the head. I mean, a lot of what I do is around, you know, esports education and really showcasing that value. And esports is, once you get over the fragmentation and some of the complications of how the landscape is actually set up, it's a space that really does kind of make a ton of sense for multiple brands that are trying to reach cord-cutting digital millennial audiences. It's you know, it's high spending. They are, you know, they have the attention. That this is a significant passion point, and they're open to brands. It's in many cases, it's you know, it's a perfect fit. And I've always looked at that fragmentation as a really ideal and one of my favorite features of this landscape. There's so many different ways that a brand can come in, and there's so many different goals, KPIs that they're really looking for. And depending on, you know, what teams and what publishers and what leagues and events and influencers and platforms are able to offer, you can really find a hyper, hyper customized approach. And you can find nuances and areas where audiences are really hoping for, and brands can come in and solve that.
So I think you're totally on target there. And I think it was said yesterday, make it look like something people have already said yes to. And that's how Overwatch League was set up. Oh, here's what I would expect from a league, whether it's the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball. And so that's why we've been advocating for 2 years talk to the folks who are responsible for sports marketing, because it's then a variation on that theme. It's maybe one degree removed, and here's the audience, and it's the best way to get to them.
Yeah, and we talk about that on the broadcast side, is that when we're trying to sell a show to a big sponsor, we want to make sure that that show looks as much like an ESPN type broadcast as it possibly can be, because you can sign off on this because it's, you know, a 50th, not even a 50th of the cost. You know, it's just, right. it's easy to say yes to, and we try to make it as easy as we possibly can. I'm not sure on time, you know, how good we are yet.
Who's the time?
5 minutes? Okay. So with 5 minutes left, what I'd like you to do is if you can just give us some parting thoughts. And everybody is here because we do want to be able to be successful when we pitch these these activations. We don't want to lose our jobs because I'm telling you, when we tell someone that it's going to cost X amount of dollars, it's going to bring certain things in, and it doesn't, we're on the hot seat. So give us some advice. Again, we know we want to make it easy, but what else can we do?
I'll kind of double down on the point about adding value and seeing where esports fans are really interested in. And a story that I like to tell a lot is around the League of Legends Spring Split and Summer Split finals. Those are in different locations all over the U.S. And doors open at 3, event ends, you know, around 6, 7, 8, depending on how long that match goes. But people are literally showing up, doors opening at 1, people are literally showing up in many cases at noon. These are audiences that don't get esports events in their location very often. And there are a lot of traveling folks, and they're thrilled for that experience. So essentially, they are going there early to expand their hands-on League of Legends esports live experience as much as possible. And in many cases, for a long time, there wasn't that much for them to do. There wasn't a ton of brand activation, and there wasn't a ton of like engagements or meet and greets and things of that, you know, of that level. Recently, League of Legends added a festival on Fridays and added more kind of engagements, and we're seeing more brands start to do concourse activation. And I think that's a great example of seeing where audiences are, you know, having more interest and the both the properties and the brands working together to essentially continue to elevate.
Thank you. That's awesome. There's a word that I've heard throughout the last 3 days that I'm taking home, which is listen. Ask questions and listen. Listen to the audience, listen to your client, collaborate, and probably most importantly, once you come to an agreement about what you're going to do, over-deliver. Because it's all based on trust. And if you don't over-deliver every single time, you're not just starting back at ground zero, you're back 5 steps from there. So listen, collaborate, come to an agreement, and over-deliver.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing for us is don't look at this and sell like a traditional NFL sponsorship, right? Like, I don't need signage, concourse around the, like, what I need you to produce content for me. I need you to enlist your influencers or whoever else to help do it. If we're going to do experientials, how do we create beer occasions within the event? Who's going to show up? How can we stream it on Twitch? What are these different assets? Because what we're able to do in this space, I mean, we've done activations where the current players and the teams are coming up to our suite in our watchtower and hanging out with fans. I mean, the thought of like Tom Brady at halftime coming up to the suite is like ridiculous, right? But in this space, you can do it. So think big. I want to be first with everything I do. Like, I don't want to be following competitors. Like, I want to lead. What are these transformative things that we can do together that aren't the traditional sponsorship assets? Because that's what gets us very excited.
Well, thank you, everybody, for taking the time out, making sure that you could help with this knowledge, because, again, this is a very it's an open area. We talk about that with this white space, and we all want to be successful. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. And I just want to acknowledge Tatiana and Joe are leaders in this space. If you're not following them, follow them.
Get on their LinkedIn right now and make sure you do.
Because you can look, you can listen, and you can learn.
It's very much the same about Stuart.
But not Joe.
Oh.
Just
and
kidding.
Joe.
All right, thanks,
Rob. Thank you all.
Thanks.